more than 2 years after a task force finished up its work on a plan to eliminate hepatitis C in New York, the State Department of Health has officially published their recommendations. To discuss their plan, including how it should be utilized and why it's coming out now, we're joined by Annette Gaudino, Director of Policy Strategy for the Treatment Action Group and a member of the Hepatitis C Elimination Task Force, which was first convened in 2018 by then-Governor Andrew Cuomo. Welcome back to the show, Annette.
Thanks, David. Really, really happy to be here to talk about this.
I bet. So when Cuomo convened this task force about 3 years ago, what was your mandate?
So our mandate was to bring all our expertise to bear. It was a multi-stakeholder task force. It included staff from the Department of Health. It included clinical providers. It included people with lived experience, community-based organizations on the front lines from all across the state to put forth what we thought are the best evidence-based recommendations to make serious progress towards eliminating hepatitis C as a public health threat in New York State. And we really saw it in the context of the broader overdose epidemic and increase in injection drug use that we've been seeing in the state and across the country.
What was the backdrop for launching this task force? Was there anything going on with maybe the spread of hepatitis? Was there any sort of technological breakthroughs? What prompted the governor to do this at the time?
We definitely have been seeing increases in new reported cases of hepatitis C across the state, as we were seeing across the country, again, kind of in tandem with increase in injection drug use related to the opioid crisis. In 2014 and 2015, we saw the introduction of really effective hepatitis C cures that can cure people by taking a pill every day for 8 weeks to 12 weeks in most cases, 95% cure rate. But really, it started because there was a community-led effort starting around 2015, 2016, in partnership with the State Department of Health to convene such a task force. So we had already started talking about it. Rather than wait for the state to get on board, we went ahead and did a community-led process in 2016 that culminated in a summit in 2017 where we had presented some initial draft recommendations. The governor eventually caught wind of this. We kept advocating for more funding and for, you know, increased attention to this problem. Some states like Washington State and Louisiana started making bold moves around hepatitis, and the governor decided that he wanted to get on that good PR and that public health leadership for New York State. And so all those things came together to build upon what the community led to an official governor's appointed task force, which was appointed in fall of 2018.
So you and I talked about the task force's recommendations prior to them coming out last year, and you described the plan as a blue sky, shoot for the moon document. Now that the report is out, can you talk about which of the recommendations, whether it has to do with prevention or treatment, that is the most exciting to you, maybe because it represents the biggest change in the status quo in terms of prevention and treatment, and could have the biggest significant difference in the fight to eliminate Hep C?
Well, a lot of things that are in these recommendations are actually now already in the works or happening. So, for example, mandating reflex testing. What reflex testing means is that it's a two-step process typically to diagnose someone with viral hepatitis. First, you find out if they're antibody positive. Have they ever been exposed to the virus? And then you do a second test to confirm that they actually have an active infection right now. So right now, this started in New York City, but is now across the state. Every time we run an antibody test in a state, you know, commercial lab or a public health lab, if it comes up positive, it automatically gets tested again for the RNA. So there's things like that. Are looking at, for example, a recommendation around allowing what are now called overdose prevention centers. So places where people can inject drugs with supervision, with nurses on hand, with naloxone on hand to prevent overdose, to make sure that they stay alive, they stay safe, but also to provide an entry point to opioid substitution therapy, whether through methadone or buprenorphine or other services they might need to help kind of make sure that their substance use isn't chaotic and that they're able to stabilize and do the things they want to do with their lives and not be sort of trapped in a chaotic pattern of use. So that's something that's in here, and New York City is just given the green light to go forward with some piloting on that. So we're hoping to see the rest of states take that forward. One blue sky thing that we put in here that we were really excited to discuss in more detail and discuss the evidence supporting it is developing a pilot and studying the feasibility of prescribing Dilaudid to people who use opioids mm-hmm. and are opioid dependent who don't do well, don't stabilize on methadone or buprenorphine. This is something that the U.S. actually used to do. This was common practice in the 50s prior to launching the war on drugs. It's something that's done in Switzerland and some other European countries, and we really want to study it here and see what the potential benefits could be and also if it's possible to implement something like that in New York State.
Why is it controversial, at least in the mainstream, for having patients self-administer prescription pharmaceutical opioids like Dilaudid?
You know, most people, unfortunately, again, since the beginning of the war on drugs some 50 years ago, start off with the premise that drug use is a moral failing. They might move on to it's a medical disorder and the person needs treatment, but there's still sort of this lingering moral judgment that the end goal for public health and for individual health for a person who uses drugs is always abstinence. Right. So anything that doesn't move towards abstinence and doesn't move towards abstinence as quickly as possible is not a good idea. Right. And so this kind of challenges that idea that someone could actually stabilize in their drug use and start to advocate for themselves, take care of their own health and do the other things that, you know, you and I do, which is like hold down a job, have a house, you know, maintain their household, do all those regular things. And that really the issue with their drug use and the thing that's harming them the most in many ways is the criminal justice approach to, you know, and the criminal justice exclusive approach to someone's drug use, as opposed to this mix of care when needed and public health and medical interventions when needed.
In case listeners are just joining us, you're listening to the Capitol Press Room, and we're talking about the release of a long-awaited state report on eliminating hepatitis C in New York, and our guest is Annette Gaudino, a member of the task force that crafted this plan. Prior to the launch of this task force, the governor had a task force on elimination of AIDS and HIV, and he had set a goal for that progress. Do we have any sort of timeline for Hep C elimination in New York as part of this report?
Not yet. We do have some preliminary metrics. I was also part of a subsequent data advisory committee that advised on, you know, what sort of baseline we should be starting from. For example, if we decide to do a metric that we want 90% decrease, well, what year are we starting counting that from? Mm-hmm. What are the gross numbers that we're looking at in terms of how many people do we think we actually have to treat? And what date do we want to do that? So that's something that I think we need to do as a part of a community process, part of a public process, like the HIV Planning Council. It's something that both in the task force and in the data advisory committee, we determined that it was not up to us in the room to make these decisions for New York State, that many, many more people needed to be involved in this conversation. But broadly speaking, the U.S. has signed on to the goal of eliminating viral hepatitis, including hepatitis B, globally as a public health threat by 2030. What's the way WHO defines it is a decrease of 65% in the mortality related to viral hepatitis, diagnosing 90% of people living with viral hepatitis and treating and curing 80% of those who have Hep C. There's no cure for Hep B, but we have a cure for Hep C. So that's the framework that we're all sort of working with, and every country and every jurisdiction is looking at how close can we get to that goal? Can we do it faster? What works for us?
Is there anything missing from this report, either because it was something that maybe was recommended by the task force and just isn't in here, or is something that has come across the transom as a new idea in the 2+ years since the task force last met?
Well, one thing that's come up that's related, and again, we took a syndemic approach looking at not just like this one infection, but the population that's most impacted, which is people who use and inject drugs and all the things related to that, is removing prior authorizations for people who receive Medicaid to receive buprenorphine and methadone, otherwise known as opioid substitution treatments, opioid agonist treatments. That's something that was put forth in legislation for a couple of sessions. Governor Cuomo vetoed it when it was passed 2 sessions ago.
Right.
This session it did pass, and my understanding is that Governor Hochul did not sign it and it has not been enacted. So that's something that really wasn't on our radar. I think it seemed a little too blue sky at the time, you know, from what we were thinking, or maybe something that we were like, oh, we'll get to that. So that's something that I would definitely like to see discussed in here, or at least as part of this process, this re-engagement that Governor Hochul is doing around the elimination of viral hepatitis, that this needs to come back on the agenda, and we really need to talk about what we have to do to overcome that hurdle and get that enacted.
So I noted in my introduction that this report came out more than 2 years after the last meeting of your task force. Do you know why the report didn't come out shortly after the last meeting in June of 2019 when task force members dotted the I's across the T's on their final recommendations?
Well, you know, I can only speculate and offer my observations.
Please do.
This is not the first time that the governor appointed a task force to listen to experts and then either didn't like what they had to say or moved on to another topic and shelved their proposals, right? I believe that it was a task force on related to education at some point in his administration, which went through the same experience, which I wasn't aware of until I had this experience with this task force. We think it's possible that the recommendations around safe consumption sites, aka safe injection facilities, which was a real topic of conversation during the task force meetings and became a real political topic, was something he did not support. And also, so he didn't want that out in public. But we always submitted these recommendations in the spirit of this being a conversation and in the spirit of them being recommendations, not an implementation plan, you know, that there was supposed to be some back and forth, that we were going to give him the best document we could, and then that there would be dialogue and constructive engagement, and also just knowing that this is a very complex thing. And so you can give somebody 3 dozen recommendations. We didn't expect that all of them would be implemented the next day. We did our work in good faith, and we expected good faith in return, but didn't really get it. So I think it was a combination of some things that he outright opposed, moving on and getting bored with it, moving on to other topics. I think COVID was a significant issue for all of us, but as you were saying, we finished our work in June. There were some final touches that needed to be put on, but we really expected it would have been vetted by the end of 2019, and that's not what happened. So I'm really, really pleased that the new governor saw our work and said, hey, let's just make this public. Let's move on. What's the holdup? Because that's how we've been feeling.
And after a quick break, we'll continue our discussion about the recently released state report on eliminating hepatitis C in New York.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals in education, human services, and healthcare.
In case you're just joining us, you're listening to the Capitol Press Room, and we're talking about the long-awaited release of a report from the state task force on their plan to eliminate hepatitis C in New York. Our guest is Annette Gaudino, Director of Policy Strategy for the Treatment Action Group and a member of the state's Hepatitis C Elimination Task Force, which was convened initially in the fall of 2018 by then-Governor Andrew Cuomo and wrapped up its work in June of 2019. So, Annette, before the break, we were talking about why the report had been shelved for so long by the Cuomo administration and your suspicions that it had to do, at least initially, with the content of the plan being a little uncomfortable for the former governor. So what was it now that led the State Department of Health under Governor Kathy Hochul to release this report? And was it a surprise that they did so when they did this November?
So as part of TAG and many other organizations are part of a coalition, a statewide coalition called the ETE Coalition, which is really the community force behind the work that you mentioned earlier that Governor Cuomo undertook to do a task force and to move ahead on eliminating and reducing the burden of HIV in New York State. And we had our, as a coalition, had our first meeting with staff from the governor's office to introduce ourselves, to make that connection, to talk about our budget priorities for the coming year, and to think about the state of the state and what we wanted to put on the radar for the new governor. And this was one of our items, you know? And so we simply told their office, like, hey, there's a report. We would really love it if you would release it. And it seemed to me that they were hearing about it for the first time, you know, and so so very quickly they became aware of it. They reached out to New York State Department of Health, who had the draft that we had all worked on and had been sitting there and been stalled. And, you know, within days, we finally have action. It's great.
So then moving forward, do you have a sense of how the Hochul administration is going to take and run with these recommendations, if at all? For example, there's the recommendation of the pilot program to explore some of the prescription opioid alternatives. There's those safe consumption sites where you mm-hmm. have supervised drug use. is there any indication that they're supportive of those, or what's sort of your indication on their position?
Well, I think, you know, we have to take it one step at a time, and I'm tempering my expectations.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we just have to just know that these things can be challenging. I think that the governor has made it clear, at least in her rhetoric, that she really cares about stemming the overdose crisis. She's certainly made that clear in some of the legislation that she has signed, like decriminalizing syringes, which is something that advocates have been fighting for years and years and years, making opioid substitution therapy available in New York State prisons, you know, and some other measures that she did move on. So I think that the awareness is there, the attention is there. Probably needs do a little bit of work to bring her office up to speed on the viral hepatitis and hepatitis B, you know, hepatitis B and C aspects of this. So, you know, building up their knowledge and trying to move that forward. But we have a really, really dedicated team at New York State Department of Health who, in my experience, have been good partners to community. We have many community-based organizations and clinical providers all over the state who've been chomping at the bit to do this work and are now getting out from under with COVID. And so there's nothing but possibilities right now, you know, and now we can finally, like, get the ball rolling, and the work begins now.
And what about the budget process in 2022? Is there any sort of funding you're looking for? I know there have been some appropriations of maybe $5 million in the past. What are you hoping for in 2022?
So the ETE Coalition has already put forth our ask to the governor in that initial meeting of $10 million per year for viral hepatitis programs throughout the state. And most of that is going to go to rest of state outside of New York City, because we have some good, robust programs in New York City. We want to build on those, but we want equity across the entire state. That's been our ask from way back. You know, we were pleased to get $5 million from the governor over 2 years, but our ask has always been a minimum of $10 million per year for these efforts. So they're aware, and we're going to push as hard as we can to get that in the next budget.
In case you're just joining us, you're listening to the Capitol Press Room, and we're talking about the release of a long-awaited state report on eliminating hepatitis C in New York, and our guest is Annette Gaudino, a member of the task force that crafted this plan. In terms of where we are right now in the fight against hepatitis C, what has the pandemic meant for this battle? Has there been a big setback in this effort? Are we worse off than we were in February 2019, or have community activists and providers on the ground been able to hold the line, so to speak?
People on the front lines have done the best they can, but it's just impossible to do harm reduction outreach, screening, testing, and prevention work at the beginning of the pandemic when no one had PPE, you know, so we are definitely worse off than we were before. That's true nationwide. What we're seeing nationwide, and the CDC just reported on this, is we saw a surge in treatment initiations starting in 2015 when the new drugs that I mentioned came online. So people that have been waiting to be treated for years got their treatment, primarily through the VA and through Medicare. Then we saw steep decline because most states, including initially New York State, had restrictions on who could get treated for their hep C. So you had to prove that you weren't using any drugs or alcohol for a certain number of months. Maybe you had to show that you actually had significant liver damage, you know, stage 3 or stage 4 cirrhosis. You couldn't have a healthy liver. You had to wait for your liver to actually be sick to get treated, plus other restrictions. We got rid of those pretty quickly in New York State, but suffice it to say that we peaked too low and we plateaued too quickly at too low a level, and now we've seen a significant dip in 2020 because of the pandemic. So we haven't been treating the sufficient number of people every year throughout the entire course of the last 5 or 6 years since we got the new drug in order to get anywhere near the targets that the WHO set. So we have a lot of work on our hands. We're definitely behind.
And is the state on its own when it comes to this effort, or is the federal government making either funding available or tweaking regulations that you think will be beneficial in this fight?
So it's a little bit of a paradoxical situation on the federal level in terms of funding. On the one hand, we have seen significant increases to what's called infectious diseases related to the opioid crisis budget line. Initially started at, I think, at $6 million, and it was increased to $13 million. And now in the latest budget, which hasn't been passed yet, But it looks like, you know, we're in a good position to increase that to 16.5 million. On the side of the CDC Division of Viral Hepatitis, which has to deal with not just hepatitis C, but B and A, including outbreaks of A, which have been more frequent in recent years and take significant resources from the federal side, we've been basically flat funded at $39.5 million for years. You know, there's been some adjustments, you know, sort of for inflation. The House increased that to $44.5 million. That's not in the Senate version, so hopefully in reconciliation we'll get the House version, but again, nothing yet. So we've been underfunded in terms of the core functions that CDC needs to be doing around viral hepatitis, and that's again reflected in the curves that I'm telling you about and the numbers that we're seeing. We are seeing some good movement in terms of funding related to infectious disease around injection drug use and the opioid crisis. We could still be doing more. One very promising thing is that there's really good language in the House bill around removing the current ban on using federal funds to purchase actual syringes for syringe exchanges. In many states and localities, it's either illegal to have a syringe exchange or there's just no local funding for it. Syringes are cheap. Lifetime of HIV treatment or even like hep C treatment or a liver transplant is very, very expensive, not to mention the health impacts to the individual.
Well, we've been speaking with Annette Gaudino. She's the Director of Policy Strategy for the Treatment Action Group and a member of the state's Hepatitis C Elimination Task Force. Annette, thank you so much for making the time, and congrats on realizing this day, I guess.
Yeah, this is great. We're really excited. And thank you so much, David, for having me on your show again and for continuing to report on this topic.
And for listeners who'd like to see this report for themselves, they can find it at the Capitol Press Room website, which is capitolpressroom.org.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by Destiny USA. Shopping, dining, and entertainment all in one location. For more information, go to www.destinyusa.com.